Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in New Orleans, sponsored by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. Good. All right, the MVP of the Super Bowl gets a free trip to Disney World. Joe Burrow, college football's MVP, the star of LSU's national championship game last night, is getting a free trip to Cincinnati. The Queen City has a terrific theme park of its own, Kings Island, but it's also home to Mike Brown's penny-pinching Bengals, the mom-and-pop football franchise that's never won a Super Bowl. By virtue of their 2-14 season, the Bengals own the number one pick in the NFL draft. The team that hasn't won a playoff game since January 9th, 1991, will have first crack at selecting and developing the quarterback version of Barry Sanders. Yep, Joe Burrow is Barry Sanders. It's the only comparison that makes sense. Last night, in a 42-25 rout of Clemson, Burrow completed the most remarkable college football season since Sanders rushed for 2,600 yards and scored 39 touchdowns for Oklahoma State in 1988. This season, Burrow passed for 5,600 yards, 60 touchdowns, and completed 76% of his passes. And leading the Tigers to an undefeated season and a national title, he beat Texas, Florida, Auburn, Bama, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Clemson. He and the Tigers would probably beat the Bengals if the rules allowed it. Instead, he'll join them. That's the price for being the second coming of Barry Sanders. You get a free trip to an NFL wasteland. The original Barry went to Detroit. He dazzled the league for 10 straight years. He won one postseason game during his illustrious career. It's hard to overcome a poorly run football franchise. It doesn't matter how talented you are. The Bengals are poorly run and cheap. Former coach Marvin Lewis gets much of the blame for Cincinnati's playoff victory drought. It's an unfair knock. The drought started the exact same year owner Mike Brown took control of the franchise. Coincidence? I don't think so. Brown is the poor man's Jerry Jones. Poor man actually doesn't do Brown justice. Brown is the homeless man's Jerry Jones. No organization spends less money in pursuit of victory than the Bengals. For years, they lacked a scouting department. The 84-year-old Brown has refused to hire and pay someone to be the general manager of the franchise. Brown has served as GM and has paid himself a handsome salary for doing the job. Mike Brown's Bengals are Joe Burrow's reward for a remarkable college career. It's the equivalent of sending a Harvard valedictorian to work at a used car lot. You know what the Harvard grad would do? Refuse to go. Joe Burrow and his dad, Jimmy, should pull an Eli and Archie Manning, a John and Jack Elway, and refuse to play for the Bengals. Force a trade. It worked out quite well for Eli and Elway. Burrow grew up in Athens, Ohio, 3 hours from Cincinnati. His dad is a former professional football player, a former college coach. Joe and Jimmy know the history of the Bengals under Mike Brown. Why go play for the cheapest franchise in the NFL when you can potentially force a trade to the Carolina Panthers? Mike Brown or David Tepper? The richest owner in football or the poorest? The guy who paid Matt Rhule $60 million to leave Baylor or the guy who had to be forced to build a scouting department? It's not much of a choice, in my opinion. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Mark Schlereth and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, get us rolling. Should Joe Burrow refuse to play for the lowly Bengals?
No, he shouldn't refuse that. You're talking to a guy who had major scholarship offers and decided to go to Columbia. So remember who you're listening to right now. What are you running from? And what are you running to if you think you can figure out how the dice roll in the NFL? I'm a guy who wants to go somewhere and light the torch, not just carry the torch, be another one of. And if you look at our NFL, how it's divided by divisions, divided by conferences, it's interesting if you talk about him going to Cincinnati and he should pause. In terms of the AFC, there are only five AFC teams that made more appearances in the playoffs this decade than those lowly Cincinnati Bengals. Patriots, Ravens, Steelers, Texans, Chiefs. Everybody else, same amount of appearances or fewer. So I wouldn't play with that dice roll. I would sit there and say, put that on me. I want to go to a situation that's sour because, oh, it's going to be sweet once they get a load of Joe Burrow. For me and my money, I'm betting on myself, and I'm going to any situation and magnifying and making it better.
Yeah, my football self says absolutely not. You turn that thing around, you go in there, and you change the culture, and you do all that. That's my football sense. My business sense says 100% with you. Because like, I'll go back to Hard Knocks, and I'll never forget this. And as soon as I watched it, I said, that's why the Bengals won't win. So they had an injury, and instead of going out, an injury to, I think it was to a tight end. So they were down a tight end or two. And instead of going out and getting themselves a tight end, and this is training camp. So you've got an opportunity to go out there and figure out how you're going to trade for somebody or how you're going to get somebody off the wire. Mike Brown sat in a meeting and go, well, let's just move that defensive end to tight end. Anybody got an issue with that? And everybody went, and nobody said anything. I was like, you will never win anything. I mean, I remember like it was at that point I went, click. I go, well, Cincinnati's out. Click. So, yeah, like my football self says there's no way. You grew up in Ohio. You cannot do this, Burrow. You can't. But my business sense says you ain't ever going to win anything in Cincinnati. So, yeah, sit out. Mm. Force a trade. Mm.
No, he's an Ohio kid. He can't. He has to. He has to do what LeBron did for his area. He has to uplift the Cincinnati Bengals. Hometown hero, only 3 years away. We saw what happened when he asked and implored people to help the food bank in his hometown. He has to go to the Bengals. Now, when he goes, he has to go with some stipulations. He has to go knowing I need a supporting cast around me to help me elevate my game like it was elevated at LSU. Well, when I look at the Bengals roster, they have some guys that they can use. Tyler Boyd is a solid receiver. If they re-sign A.J. Green and he's healthy, he is a number one receiver. Joe Mixon in the mix, one of the top running backs in the league. Sure, you need to shore up the offensive line, but if Zach Taylor can steal the scheme that he saw at LSU this season, there's no reason why Joe Burrow can't be Cincinnati's version of LeBron.
And look, LeBron plays basketball. There's five guys on the court.
He's an all-state basketball player.
One guy in basketball can make an amazing difference. It takes a village in football. And the village just doesn't stop on the field. The coaching staff, the scouting department, the smart moves from the GM chair, all of that in order to ensure success in Cincinnati. The other thing, the reason why I say this, I went through this experience with Jeff George, Indianapolis product. He forced a trade to get to Indianapolis coming out of the draft. One of the biggest mistakes of his life. The Irsay family, particularly at that time, didn't know what the hell it was doing with the Colts. Wanting to come home and be a hometown hero for a long-suffering franchise is one of the biggest burdens you can take on. If you're a basketball player playing in the NBA, have at it. You and a couple of guys can fix it. Doesn't matter what the coaching is. Doesn't matter what the ownership and all that other stuff is. In the NFL, if the village isn't with you, you're not going anywhere.
Well, I wouldn't paint it that way. I think it's misconstruing the situation. He is not wanting to go back necessarily to his hometown. He's going to get drafted to his hometown, so let's find a silver lining in that situation. It is funny, Mark, you talk about watching one decision and telling you someone's off.
Right.
We watched the Patriots this year, watched their tight end retire, trade away another tight end, and then at the end of the season complain they don't have a tight end.
Right.
So, and that's the Patriots. So every team finds itself in the same boat. They're one of 12 teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. But you know, there are some damn good teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. And one of them you even mentioned, the Panthers, haven't won a Super Bowl. You said, force a trade to go to the Panthers. Why? What's better there? Texans, ownership. Titans, Vikings, Bills. We can say ownership, but I want that to translate into production and overall holding up the trophy. And if you haven't done it yet, I'm not so guaranteed that you're going to do it going forward. So for me, I roll the dice into a sour situation to make it sweet.
Marcellus.
I'm listening. They just hired a coach for $70 million who never coached in the NFL.
Mike Brown is clearly the most frugal NFL owner we have. Mm-hmm. The history is clear as day.
Players still got helmets and shoulder pads. That's all you need. I mean, what else do you need? A weight room?
But honestly, he played at Ohio State, where they spared no expense in pursuit of victory. He played at LSU. They spared no expense in pursuit of victory. That's not the environment he's going to walk into in Cincinnati. And if he has the opportunity to force himself someplace else, bite that bullet. We beat up Eli Manning for doing it, and the Manning family, 2 Super Bowls. We beat up John Elway for doing it, and Jack Elway, 5 Super Bowl appearances, 2 Super Bowl titles, one of the greatest careers we've ever seen. Organization and situation matter tremendously in the NFL and at that position. I'm just talking. Again, what Marvin Lewis did there was a modern miracle given the level of support, and he gets beat up for it and blah, blah. But the not winning in the playoffs started in 1991. That was the last, in January 91. Mike Brown became the owner and controlling general manager of that team later in 1991. They haven't won a playoff game since. I wouldn't do it if I'm
But do you know the teams that, I'm talking about of late, what have you done for me lately? The teams that are less than the Bengals in terms of playoff appearances of late. Like, good teams, 49ers. Just a couple days ago, let alone years ago, we were like, the 49ers are trash. The Titans right now. We could talk about the Rams, like the Cowboys, Vikings. Like, these are teams recently that have had less success than what we're talking about in Cincinnati. What's so discouraging?
What's discouraging, and I'm with you. I mean, I look at this like, hey, as a kid that's from Ohio, that would be a really tough, and you'd take a beating, and it'd be a tough thing to be able to do that. But as Jason pointed out, man, you can go, you can shut up the critics, and you can go to a place, an organization that at least gives you the opportunity. I had this conversation with Mike Shanahan, and he had told me at one point, there are 12 teams in the National Football League that are legitimate Super Bowl contenders, that have the ownership to contend for the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying that if an outlier happens, that a team can win a Super Bowl, right? But there are 12 teams that are legitimately not just worried about growing their wealth on a year-to-year basis from an equity standpoint, but are actually spending money to win world championships. And the Bengals ain't one of them.
But like, the Cowboys are.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys haven't won.
I get that they haven't won.
It all has to do with how do you want to go down. Mm-hmm. Swinging with, again, because the Cowboys do a lot of dumb things I disagree with, but they're trying. And I'm just, Mike Brown makes his living off the Bengals.
Right. The difference is this. The Cowboys haven't won because the Cowboys can't get out of their own way. It's not because of the resources that they spend. The Bengals don't win because they can't get out of their own way and they won't spend the resources.
Or they didn't have a franchise quarterback like this.
Well, here's the thing, and right? I'm really surprised that you would take that take, because I've sat up here and I've heard you talk about core values as it relates to football. And so core values, one of those core values are resiliency, grit, perseverance. We're encouraging Joe Burrow to run from an adverse situation. What would we be teaching him? What would we be saying if we're saying, run for a better situation? He is from that area, in essence, 3 hours away. He has to go and be the savior. Joe Burrow cannot run from the Cincinnati Bengals in this situation.
You do know, I mean, like, football core values are universal from high school to college to pros. And so, Bucky, you coach high school football. You see kids jump to better situations all the time.
And I'm not a fan of that.
Okay, you were a recruited athlete. And it's like, oh, should I go to Ohio State where we got a chance to win a national championship? Or should I accept this offer from Maryland?
But what's analogous in that is not that. It's the fact that he commits somewhere or he goes with the process as it's flowing and then he interrupts that. The negative part about it is how you're going to be underwater in equity wherever you go day one. Think about it. If you don't do what Elway did, if you don't do what Eli did, which is multiple Super Bowl wins, then everyone's going to look at you and deem it a failure because you forced this and didn't win. Why would you set yourself up for such preposterous expectations when you're talking about just going into an NFL as a rookie.
The other situation you're setting yourself up for, why go into a situation where I'm not going to be supported like all the other elite quarterbacks in the NFL?
Carson Palmer didn't feel that way.
I understand that.
Andy Dalton didn't feel that way either.
Right.
Carson Palmer forced his way out of Cincinnati. He had enough and forced his way out of Cincinnati. Andy Dalton doesn't have this kid's talent.
I bet you Andy Dalton felt that way this year when he's getting sacked 9 times a game and then they benched him for a rookie.
Writing on the wall.
He already has a natural ready-made excuse. If he goes there and he fails, we're all going to blame the organization before we blame him.
Who wants a ready-made excuse?
He has a ready-made excuse. That spotlight will be on him in a different vein.
I'd be happy to go, and I'd be like the lead in the charge to change the culture of the organization. I'm just saying from a business aspect, I don't know that any one person can change the culture of that organization.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes, which doesn't seem right, especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything, yes, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you even on nights and weekends. And they're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right, so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Bucky Brooks is back, and we're joined now by Super Bowl champion Brady Papinga. Time for a big story. Let's move to Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have had a bounce back season. Rodgers' numbers were down a bit this year, and Yahoo's Dan Wetzel says Rodgers still needs to deliver another Super Bowl to Lambeau. But after missing the playoffs the last two seasons and starting over with a new coach, Rodgers and the Packers have far exceeded expectations just by getting to this weekend's NFC Championship game against the 49ers. All right, Marcellus, you agree with me, win or lose? Was this a successful year for Aaron Rodgers?
If they lose with a 13-3 record, that is not a successful year for Aaron Rodgers in terms of his legacy. It will be a building block year and a successful year for this team and this franchise as it's going forward with Matt LaFleur as their young coach. But Aaron Rodgers is going to sit back selfishly and have some scotch and sit there and say, oh, which direction is this heading in terms of me personally? It took less of Aaron Rodgers to get more out of this team. That's not a good formula. No player feels great, optimal in that situation. You want to go out there and not just be a winner, but be the reason you're winning. Right now, it's the running game and the defense. And I think that has an impact on not only his ego, but on his foresight of what's going forward in this situation. So this team taps out this week, as everyone expects, against San Francisco. The team may say arrows pointing up, but I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to say the same.
Did you see that sweet throw he took? He connected with Jimmy Graham.
Dart.
The one with Devontae Adams to seal the game. He's playing pretty good football.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you right now, win, lose, or draw, Aaron's going to feel pumped about this season. The Packers are going to feel like this was a successful season, because the bottom line is you just want to contend. Because winning championships, everything has to fall on the line. I mean, you look at the Giants championship when they beat the Patriots when they were 16-0. It literally came down a ball sticking to David Tyree's head for them to full-on win the Super Bowl. And so that's how I look at it. If you're contending and you're in Aaron's position and you're in the NFC Championship game, you're on the right track. Now it's just a matter of having those things fall into place for you to get over the top.
Man, I run the risk of being the guy that hates all the old quarterbacks, but Aaron Rodgers is on the descent. He's on the decline. 3 straight years, his passer rating has come down, his completion percentage has come down, and by his standard, he hasn't played really, really well this year. He has shown flashes of being the old Aaron Rodgers, but this team has done the other stuff around him. Aaron Jones, the running game, the defense stepping up. I believe he needs to win this game to just reverse the narrative on how people are viewing him. Because I don't think people are seeing him as the same Aaron Rodgers. This is a game where he has an opportunity to show people he still has the magic.
Say it.
Because they're prohibitive underdogs in this game. When you look at their roster doesn't stack up to the 49ers. So the only way that I can see them winning, Aaron Rodgers has to be that special guy. If he does that, then I think we view Aaron Rodgers like we always have viewed him in the past.
Bucky, he has Davante Adams at wide receiver and the ghost of Jimmy Graham, whatever's left.
The ashes. Running ashes.
I mean, those numbers about this is down, that's down, blah, blah, blah. The personnel around him is down.
We love making excuses for everybody's performance. Now, the guy is paid to be one of the premier players in the game.
He has his team in the NFC Championship.
Isn't he supposed to
elevate him? They went 13-3 the NFC.
But I was here last week, and when I looked at my note, it said they were 10-1 against teams that were 500 or less. Mm. So they hadn't really been knocking off these heavyweight teams. When they faced heavyweights, they've been knocked out. When they went on the road and played the San Francisco 49ers, they got obliterated. Yeah. When they played the Chargers on the road, they got obliterated. At some point, when we're talking about him being the baddest man on the planet, doesn't he have to get them over the top?
No. You move the goalposts. Was this a successful year for Aaron Rodgers?
No. I'm going to say it again. There's no I in team, but there is a me. M-E, damn it. And guess what? When this team is 13-3, that sounds great. But if we lose this week, I am now 1-3 in NFC Championship games. Guess what? When they start talking about Aaron Rodgers, what are they going to say? You only beat Jay Cutler. And then you're going to say, well, I have one Super Bowl ring. And they're going to say, and that's it? Because people who were less than you have more than you. And Aaron Rodgers is not sitting there even satisfied with 13-3. Tell you why. They won the Super Bowl with 15 guys on IR at a 10-6 record. Came back the next year, everyone's healthy, fully loaded, 15-1. What happened? Got in the playoffs, 1-done. You think that is not living in Aaron Rodgers right now? Like, these records sound great, but unless you finish the deal, we don't know what's going to come from this going forward.
I'm blown away.
What?
the man was six? They won six games last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They made a seven-game improvement in terms of wins and losses.
He's nearing the end.
The guy threw, six interceptions or four interceptions this year? He threw four interceptions all year. Mm-hmm. There's just no way. He's playing in the NFC. There's no way this year isn't a success. What are we talking about?
Third worst passer rating of his career.
Let me interject here. I'm confused. So you guys are telling me this. Let's say they won 11-5 this year, and they got knocked out in the divisional round, but his stats were far superior. You're going to say that's a successful year for Aaron Rodgers? What are all the stats for?
Well, I mean, for
aren't
him,
they all directed for one end?
What end?
To win the flipping game.
You act like they all cut Super Bowl champions. You act like Super Bowl champions play fine work.
I'm surprised at you because you played there. We played in Green Bay. What do they call Green Bay? Title town. The only way they're satisfied in Green Bay are to win titles. The trophy is named after the greatest coach in Green Bay Packers history. And if the Lombardi Trophy.
If that mindset was true, Tom Brady wouldn't be a free agent
right now.
All that success, I thought it was about the end game. He won the Super Bowl last year.
Tom Brady isn't playing nearly as well as Aaron Rodgers.
It's a whole other topic.
And that's a whole
other topic.
But it is Title Town. And the people in Title Town, are smart enough to know there's a path to the title.
It's a process. It's a process.
Once every 20 years.
So our path, based on how we play, because I hear Marcellus talk about past performance predicts future. So I'm looking. Everything is on the descent. Completion percentage and passer rating. But I'm supposed to believe that it's going to decline again next year, but they're going to be a better team.
Yeah.
They play a tougher schedule next year than they do this year.
Yeah.
I just don't see how this can be viewed as a success.
Because they're going to have better receivers next year.
They've been drafting receivers. They've been bringing receivers in.
Jordy Nelson's going to go 5 years.
Their head coach is going to be better. This is the first time out of the first had to manage a game.
Whitlock and Wiley. All right, we're going to be joined here by Fox MLB reporter Ken Rosenthal to talk about the major fallout from the Astros sign-stealing scandal. Ken, thanks for being here. All right, Ken, did they get the punishment right? I felt like it should have been a little harsher.
Jason, there are a lot of opinions on this, and I actually felt the punishment was appropriate. Now, remember, it was 1 year for Hinch, or one season for Hinch, one season for Luno, the manager and the general manager. First round, second round picks, each of the next 2 years, $5 million fine. Now, there are people in the game who felt it should have been harsher. I had two GMs reach out to me last night and basically voiced that opinion. But given that ultimately the Astros made the decision to fire both Hinch and Luno, it becomes an even harsher punishment. And while we don't know if they coordinated with MLB or not, it certainly stands to reason that there was some communication back and forth.
Now, the Dodger fan in me is wondering, was there a real conversation of the Astros vacating their World Series wins?
There was not, Marcellus. And if you go back to the steroid era, there's never been an asterisk placed. There's never been records taken away. And the reason for that is baseball does not want to rewrite history. And frankly, I don't believe it should rewrite history. That is a situation where what's done is done, and you can't go back and start re-legislating what happened in the past. You do that, and you open up a Pandora's box. So that was never going to happen, nor, in my opinion, should it happen.
Ken, help us understand how big of a deal is this sign stealing and the elaborate way they went about it, because the narrative is kind of like everybody does this. How big of a deal is it for you, a hardcore baseball person?
It's a big deal because the Astros broke the rules. And Jason, let me explain that sign stealing has been in the game forever. Sign stealing with players using their own wits, their eyes, signaling with their hands, doing that kind of thing. What is prohibited and what has been prohibited since the start of 2018 explicitly, it was prohibited before that but not so explicitly, is sign stealing with the assistance of electronic means. So what did the Astros do? Had a camera in center field, had a monitor steps away from their dugout. They would sit by the monitor, decode the signs, and then bang a garbage can to signal what was coming to the hitter. That is an egregious form of using electronics to steal signs. And while there are other forms of this and other teams apparently did do this, we reported on the Red Sox in The Athletic, at the same time, what the Astros did seemingly was a step beyond.
Growing up in Indianapolis, my grandmother, huge Cincinnati Reds fan, huge Pete Rose fan. Tell me why these guys are getting treated better than Pete Rose, who's been banned from baseball for life over a gambling scandal.
Pete Rose committed what is perceived to be the cardinal sin in this sport, and that is gambling while an active player or manager. He was actually a manager at the time, and that is why he received his lifetime ban. These penalties yesterday that were handed out, now they're unprecedented. And yeah, you could argue for a lifetime ban, but I don't know that it's perceived in the same light. Actually, I do know it's not perceived in the same light by Major League Baseball. And effectively, Jeff Luhnow, the GM, might have gotten a lifetime ban, at least from the position of GM. I don't know that any team will hire him. Now, Hinch is a much more popular guy within the sport, very well respected. Not a guy who has fired scouts like Luhnow did and kind of made enemies the way Luhnow did. So I can see him working again as a manager, but I have a hard time seeing Luhnow perhaps getting another job as GM.
Well, current Red Sox manager Alex Cora was implicated in the scheme as well. Somewhere in Boston, he's biting his fingernails. You expect him to be suspended or lose his job?
Baseball delayed his discipline, Marcellus, until they complete their investigation of the Red Sox. The 2018 Red Sox, of which he was the manager, and a team, of course, that we know won the World Series that season with him at the helm in his first year. Now, The Athletic and a co-writer of mine, Evan Drellick, we reported last week that the Red Sox, according to three sources, also stole signs illegally. They did it during the 2018 season that I just referred to, and they did it in a little bit different way. They used the video replay room, the room that teams use to determine whether a manager should challenge a call, and what they did was decoded the signs through the video replay room, had it walked out to the dugout by someone, usually a player, and then they would signal a runner on first or second. The runner would signal the batter at home plate. That's not the same as banging a garbage can, but the Red Sox violation would have occurred after the sport put in stricter rules, I should say, and really clamped down on this entirely, with the commissioner warning that he would take any future violation extremely seriously after the Apple Watch incident with the Yankees and Red Sox at the end of 2017. So that is where the Red Sox problem would come in. Their violations occurred after all that.
Now, earlier, Ken, you said baseball won't rewrite history, but they can write the future. So let's talk about some of the players, star players, and future Hall of Famers like a Jose Altuve. Will those guys be barred, banned from entering the Hall of Fame because of this scandal?
That depends on the voters, and it remains to be seen when they retire and then have the 5-year waiting period and then become eligible for the Hall of Fame, how voters will respond. It remains to be seen how the rest of their careers will go. But the reason players were not suspended here, and this is a fair question and point to make, the commissioner determined that he is going to hold the general managers and managers responsible for the conduct that occurs. Not the players, they're the ones who are supposed to adhere to the rules and supposed to be following them properly, but they need to be kind of kept in line by management. And that is what did not happen with the Astros, and that is why the GM and manager got the suspensions they did. But as for the future and Hall of Fame chances, let's see how their careers play out and where it all goes from here.
Ken, thank you so much for joining us and explaining this situation. Really appreciate it. Mark Schlereth and Brady Papinga are back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Antonio Brown, whose public meltdown continued yesterday and continues to cause a lot of concern. AB live streamed the confrontation he had with police and the mother of his children on Instagram. Just want to warn you guys, the video is pretty hard to listen. Here's 20 seconds of the full 2.5-minute clip.
Get the f*** out of here. Get the f*** out of my property, you f***. Come on, man. F*** out of here. I love you, Poppy. I love you. Go ahead and the police. Get the f*** out of here. Little cop, look at the little cop. You wish you could take me, you out of here. Yeah, get in the back of the police car, and you ain't leaving with out of here, you bum.
All right, guys, I want to ask you, would you be disappointed if an NFL team signs Antonio Brown?
At this point, yes, I would. I look at that video, and AB's not aware he's abusing his children. It's not just the adults he's abusing. He's abusing his children. And if he has this little self-awareness, this willing to mistreat his young children in this way, I just think he'd be a horrible teammate, a horrible look for the NFL to invite. This guy needs some serious help and needs to be put in timeout for a lot longer before I feel like he should be invited back into the NFL.
Yeah, because he needs serious help, I wouldn't be disappointed if a team signed him. I think that will be the process. I think AB right now obviously has some behavioral issues and maybe deeper psychological issues. Those will be addressed, I think, publicly, even though privately he needs that help. And I think the team that does endorse him, does sign him, is going to make sure they go through that process. And then once he goes through that process, obviously there will be contingencies with that, maybe an absence from social media, which will distance himself from this moment right now of virality. And then you'll say, oh, I've seen the NFL do worse things for worse players. And you will put him not as the same demon that you probably have in your mind right now. And you would think of a Greg Hardy, or you would think of a Dante Stallworth, and you'll think of other incidents. And you say, you know what? AB has shown remorse, shown some contrition. I'm fast forwarding for the team.
That's a prediction.
Well, the team, we're predicting the team signing them. So in that prediction, I think those will be the proper steps, and then that will be okay.
Yeah, I think it's a privilege to play in the National Football League, and you've lost that privilege. And until you show contrition, I think it's on you to show contrition. I think it's on you to clean your life up. I think it's on you to earn an opportunity back before some NFL team should give you a chance. So, no, I'd be disappointed if any of an NFL team signed him.
Especially off the heels of that video. I mean, that video is so repulsive that any team that would associate themselves with that, because what you're basically saying, if you sign a guy, is like, we're signing the full package of him. We understand all the baggage that comes with him, and we're good with it. And if anybody came across like they're good with that video, that'd be extremely disappointing. So he's toxic right now.
The other reason, I'm going to go a step further, and I want to be clear here. I'm no kind of expert on what I'm about to talk about. But this is what I think. That's all the classic behavior of a very violent, potentially violent person. That's the mentality that leads to abuse of children, leads to abuse of women, leads to violent encounters with other human beings that you deem less than you. And that's why I would say I'd be very leery if I'm an NFL team. This guy is showing all the signs of, he's not only capable of hurting others, he's capable of hurting himself. Buyer beware, until he's willing to address these issues. The thought that some NFL team is going to inspire him to address these issues, I think, is naive.
It's interesting. We can't forget the core issue here, which is signing a player to play football. And we can lean heavy into the humanitarian angle, but we also have to remember that they're out there blocking, tackling, sacking, and catching passes. And I think if you keep that as your core focus, AB missed the entire year and still ranks top two in all categories as a receiver. We're talking about first in reception, second in yards.
None of that matters.
Oh, hold on. Yes, if it didn't matter, we wouldn't have a conversation about AB. We would never bring up Antonio Brown if this wasn't a future Hall of Famer sitting on the shelf that people are saying, can you fix him or not? So it does matter. If he was sorry, no one would talk about AB again. It's because he has that talent. And there's still some toothpaste in that tube. So now we're trying to say, how do you extract it? And I think there's a process to extract it. Is he willing to do those steps is a different conversation. But I certainly see a team, they just kicked the tires on him with the Saints. That wasn't even a month ago.
I agree. I thought it was bad then. I think after this video of this man doing this in front of his children and then talking, and again, we beeped out all the racist connotations. I just think at some point it's a bridge too far. And I've seen a lot of guys in the NFL get second chances that showed a lot of remorse and a lot of contrition and aren't on video demonstrating this kind of sociopathic behavior.
Yeah. When the noise, I always say, when the noise outweighs the potential, you know, when the problems outweigh the potential, that's when you no longer get opportunities. Like, we'll give dudes a lot of opportunities that their production outweighs their problems. But at this point, the problems are so strong. And what we've seen, again, like, there, when you put the video to the actions and everybody and their brother's uncle can see the video, then it becomes real to everybody. And you sign this dude and the reality of it, people stop showing up.
I think it's bad for the product in terms of, I can't imagine any woman or mother wanting to cheer for, root for Antonio Brown. And when you just think of, again, it's a television product. It's about drawing as massive an audience as you can without being polarizing. And I'm just, for the NFL on this issue, the team that signs him to me is being disrespectful to the league, because if this guy continues on this path and harms someone else, that's on the NFL. That's another black guy for the NFL.
But there are women who cheer for the Cowboys, and the Cowboys did this. You know what's happening right now? Everyone's being sensationalized. And one of the things that I truly take notice of and make sure I stay objective to is there's an onus on you to not be sensationalized because of out of sight, out of mind experiences. So case in point, there are guys in the NFL that have done worse things than AB just did right now. Now here's the problem. There are no videos, no transcripts, right, no witnesses.
But he sensationalized himself.
He posted it. I'm not saying that that's not a problem. I'm just letting you guys know, if you're going to be a matter of fact perspective giver, you look at all these guys who are in the league that have done things, but because it hasn't been sensationalized, you turn a blind eye.
Well, we don't know, and we don't. Again, I'm just, for me, and I'm not a parent.
All I'm saying is that gives him an entry back to the league, because he won't have the worst indiscretion, as bad as it is.
But other people's discretions aren't on tape. They're not, and I'm just sorry, to me, and again, I'm not a parent, but I do like kids. This is an abuse of kids. The psychological damage he's doing to these kids is massive. He's probably repeating the mistakes that caused him to be the way that he is. Because a lot of times that's what we do. We grow up in dysfunction, and then we visit that dysfunction on the young people we're in charge of developing and mentoring. I just think this is a bridge way too far for the NFL. I'm sympathetic towards almost anybody. Defended the Cowboys signing Greg Hardy. But this, the abuse of the kids, or the racism that he's displaying, the lack of respect for authority. Again, I hate to even, but I'm going to go this far. Those cops that he's abusing probably making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. And they're going to get talked to this way? For what? What did they do?
Well, the money doesn't matter how much. You get paid nothing, you get paid $1 million. Like, the conversation doesn't change how you should talk to me verbally. The thing about this is, the NFL is going to take a distant step away from being sensationalized. And they're going to look at it objectively. And then AB is going to have to show his steps of remorse and contrition. If those two things occur, the signing of Antonio Brown wouldn't be disappointing to me. Could you put yourself in that mindset? Or you just say, all bets off, he's done.
It can't be the league saying, come here, let us nurture you back to health. Yeah. Until he takes responsibility. You know, there's a saying in the NFL that the best ability is availability, baloney. It's responsibility. You want to win. You want to be good. You want to go out there and have a championship effort. You got to take responsibility, every guy on the team, and you have to look at the team as more important than yourself. And that guy doesn't look at anybody as more important than himself except him.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined again by Mark Slareth and Bucky Brooks. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, Odell Beckham Jr. is suffering from the same disease as Antonio Brown, LeBron James, Colin Kaepernick, and all the other athletes obsessed with their platforms and building their individual brands. Their brains have been hijacked by their smartphones, social media apps, and the need for constant attention. They've been infected with the influencer disease. It's the bubonic or black plague of the 21st century. In the 14th century, half of Europe was wiped out by the bubonic plague. The social media influencer plague is wiping out half of America's high-profile athletes. Last night, during the on-field celebration of LSU's victory over Clemson in the national title game, Beckham was filmed handing out wads of cash to LSU players. He made no attempt to conceal the cash gifts. It was clearly a stunt to promote Odell Beckham Jr. This morning, LSU issued a statement saying the cash Beckham passed out was fake. I'm not interested in going Perry Mason. I don't care whether the money is real or fake. The point is, the LSU players accomplished something historic last night, and Beckham used it as a platform to promote Odell Beckham Jr. He wanted to promote his social media following. He wanted to expand his reach as an influencer. It's no different from LeBron shouting Taco Tuesday in a Speedy Gonzalez voice, or dunking in his son's AAU layup line, or Antonio Brown filming his belligerent racist behavior, or Kaepernick using police brutality as a tool to sell custom Nike shoes. These guys are addicted to attention and obsessed with being influencers. Athletes used to be role models. They would be asked to conduct themselves publicly in ways that could be role modeled by young people. The goal now is to be an influencer. This is much different from being a role model. An influencer is a person that influences other people. The primary purpose of an influencer is to influence large groups of people to buy a certain product. An influencer provokes commerce, consumption, consumerism. An influencer is a used car salesman. Their job is to talk you into overpaying for a product you likely don't need and won't get a good return on your investment. Sneakers. The social media plague that has converted role models into influencers. And the most effective influencers are the ones who still pretend to be role models. OBJ's latest publicity stunt is why I don't take him seriously as a winner. He's not in the game of football to win. He's in it for attention, fame, and influence. He'd rather sell you an overpriced designer watch than win a Super Bowl. All right, guys. Do we have a problem with what Odell did last night?
I don't. I actually loved it. It's funny. I was watching it before this moment, looking at the pageantry, the confetti, the enormity of this event. And I was like, you know, I didn't want to go old adage, but I was like, damn, everybody making something off of this. Human capital, real capital, bonuses. Them players, boy, they're just getting sold a memory. That's great. And I didn't say anything. I don't tweet that. That's not my thing. I ain't go to a big school either, so I don't know that full experience. But I respect that he highlighted the hypocrisy in his own unique way. He did it in a way where he knew the cameras were going to come, but attention serving as that is, it's not him grabbing the cameras, it's the cameras following him. And it's funny, in this situation, I like a guy who's like, look, man, everybody out here winning, and y'all won But let me show you what a real win is, even in a fake way. And I just think that in that moment, it wasn't about stealing from those guys. It was telling them how they were being stolen from. And I thought there was a unique way of doing it instead of the same old cliche, boring, monotone, pay the athletes. So respect to Odell for being creative, at least.
Yeah, I suppose I look at it differently. I look at an opportunity to be with your teammates, to celebrate something that's incredibly special, a world championship, and somebody that's going to steal some shine from you. And, you know, one of the things that happened to me over the course of my son's baseball career, he was playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks in Chicago. And the Chicago Cubs called me and asked me, I was working at ESPN at the time, asked me to come out and throw out the first pitch and then to sing the seventh inning stretch. And man, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I graciously accepted and I hung up the phone. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I said to myself, you idiot. And I made the call back and said, you know what? I'm there to support my son, not to steal my son's shine. I can't imagine me being up there singing the seventh inning stretch while my son's warming up the bullpen to come into the game. And it would be completely inappropriate for me to steal the shine from him. And all I saw was a guy that was out there self-promoting his brand. That's what I saw. And that to me is never going to be right. There's nothing you can say to me that will say, okay, you know what, that's right. I just don't think it is.
Look, it's not a great look, but I'm not mad at him. He's an alum. He's part of the LSU family. When you looked at the TV shows on ESPN and the others that were showing the game, there were a lot of LSU dudes in the building. Tyrann Mathieu was in the building. And so when Odell goes and they celebrate at the end and he daps them up and gives them the fake money, is it a little extra? Yes. Am I troubled by it in terms of you need to be a little more careful when it comes to protecting the bigger brand, which is LSU, and the kids that look up to him, which are those players? Yes. But in terms of you saying or we're proposing that it's a self-serving act designed for him to elevate his brand, I don't think it's that. I think it's a young guy really excited about his team winning the chip.
You honestly think self-promotion's not part of what he's doing here?
No, I really think he's really excited about his squad.
You created a bunch of fake money. Like that, that's not premeditated. That you just happen to carry around. I mean, you don't
turnover chains,
right?
Turnover rings.
Yeah, it's premeditated.
I'm just saying
all those things. That's part of your
team and your team's culture. I mean, you came out. Hey, there was a lot of guys. How many of those guys, those former LSU players that were there, came out with wads of fake money and started handing money?
I thought Honey Badger was a part of like doling some of that out, some of the fake.
I didn't see that.
But you got to look at it this. First, let's keep perspective and context. Let's stop acting so holistic about this event. LSU canceled classes for 2 days so the students could be there. A school of higher education, quote, higher education, is canceling school so y'all go out there and watch this game. President Trump is in the building because Louisiana and South Carolina is in the building. Everybody's out there on something that is going to shine light on what they want to. At least Odell's is not self-serving because the end game of what he's trying to promote is actually going to benefit those athletes who are collegiate athletes, not him. He already been to the other side. He's been paid for his services. He's like, yo, this is next.
Look,
this is the biggest reward.
And again, this all comes down to, do you really want to promote change or do you really want to promote yourself? Odell Beckham Jr. on that night, again, he's LSU football's probably most prominent alum. He can get with reporters and articulate exactly what's wrong with the NCAA amateurism system. He can go at the system in a substantive way. That's not, hey, look at me. That's not an NCAA violation that jeopardizes LSU, Ed Orgeron, the players. Again, what he did put everybody in a negative light because you'll never get Ed Orgeron to go, hey, you know what, let's play all the players. That's what needs to be done. He may believe it, but he ain't saying that because he's protecting his job and the system that he currently works in. Odell, we never require people to do anything real. If it's a gesture, we're good with it and we're going to support it. Odell, if he wants to speak out against NCAA amateurs, and I wish the athletes would, in a substantive way that affects change. This little stunt is this dude taking shine off the people that actually put the work in.
I take it differently to that because, like, having been around and having seen his effect on young people, they gravitate to him. He is as close to a rock star as I ever can imagine. He is our version of what Michael Jackson was to us as a kid.
I was just about to say Michael Jackson. Kids gravitated towards him as well. So that's not the gold standard.
So when I think about Odell and in this moment, because he goes back to LSU, because he's from Louisiana, because there's a bond with the LSU guys, I really believe this was a moment with him and the kids that he knows because he worked out with them to shine and elevate them as opposed to, hey, look at me, I'm Odell Beckham Jr. I didn't get that from this judge.
In what way did he elevate them?
That's the thing. That's why I think we have an issue and a difference of opinion. We want something substantive from every gesture, every action, or you're pulling for your own self-serving attention needs because everyone's going to be in rally of looking at Odell. That's messed up because Odell can't live a normal existence. He can't do anything that is deemed foolish, clout chasing, or anything because everything he does has to be measured of a higher standard because he's a higher celebrity. And what you're asking for...
But that's how that works.
That's not how that works. That's how you perceive it to work.
When you walk out of this building... Do you conduct yourself a certain way because
Conduct myself. It's not. I don't live by an agenda of standard. I live by my own expression, and that is in parallel to what people can see is law-abiding and of high standard. Okay. But okay. I do some things. Look, I'll show up to your office in flip-flops, and you might say, oh, he over here just chilling. I don't show up to the set 20 minutes early just to be babysat. I'm going to get here when it's time to work. So I do some things that are not a part of decorum. But what we're really discussing here is not unity of issue. We're asking for uniformity. We're asking Odell to do the same thing we want him to do something substantive. And I think that's unfair to him.
Well, I think if he didn't have a pattern of behavior over the last 5 or 6 years of always doing, hey, look at me antics, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt. If Larry Fitzgerald was an LSU grad and pulled this stunt, we'd be having a completely different conversation. But because it's Odell, and he's kicking nets, and he's kissing nets, and he's wearing watches, he's complaining about his uniform, every week there's a new OBJ. He's laying in bed with drugs, a woman, and pizza, and blah, blah. Every week there's something new with Odell Beckham Jr. that's, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
And we can't sit there and go, oh, he just did some more hey, look at me stuff. He just went to the LSU football game on a night when those kids, all the spotlight should be on those kids.
But Bucky's point is, it's not so much, himself. Hey, look at me. It's, hey, why you keep looking at me? Because Bucky said he wasn't the only LSU grad there. We don't know what they were doing, but we're not going to make a story out of it.
Everybody's. I would say it's like when one of the homies gets put on. He did. He's celebrating with the crew because they just did something significant. He is, as you said.
You can do it without the money.
No. But why does he have to do it to
our way?
No, Bucky, I'm gonna tell you why or why your standard doesn't work. No one has to. You're right. People are free to do whatever the hell they want to do as long as it doesn't infringe upon someone else's freedom, happiness, health, whatever. They are right. But on this show and other shows like it, people do critique the behavior of these people. And they do get, man, that's some hey, look at me stuff. Again, he doesn't have to, he clearly is not going to adhere to my standard.
I'm not demanding that.
But damn it, this is some hey, look at me stuff. As much as he thinks he cares about LSU, I guarantee you he don't care about LSU no more than I care about Ball State. And no more than Mark cares about Idaho, or Marcellus cares about Columbia, or
North Carolina,
I'm sorry. And so there are certain people, and he has the character flaw.
He has to get attention. He has to be the center of attention. If the guy could have, he probably would have ran out onto the field and tried to catch a touchdown pass or tackle somebody. He was going to do something to say, hey, look at Odell.
But I think he's in a no-win situation.
No win.
Because with him in LSU, I can guarantee you all those receivers that we saw scoring touchdowns last night, I bet you they were talked about, hey, Odell Beckham Jr. did it here. You can be a part of it. And I'm sure there is a bond and a connection between Odell Beckham Jr. and Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase and all those other guys.
He's not in a no-win situation. If you come out, one of the most beautiful things I ever saw was Tua Tagovailoa take over in the second half against Georgia in a 13-0 deficit, drive his football team down the football field, and a 25-2 starter in Jalen Hurts knew he was never going to play in Alabama again. And you know who's one of the first guys down to celebrate Tua Tagovailoa's touchdown throw to make it 13-7? Was Jalen Hurts. When you celebrate somebody else's victory like it's your own victory, that should be celebrated. When you celebrate somebody else's victory with $100 bills passing out to kids, that's you celebrating you, not you celebrating them.
You know who was the first one out of town on the first thing smoking? Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, because he's never going to play again. That's all right.
And that's fine. So let's not overvalue being understated. Like, these old Puritan values.
I'm not saying it's being understated. You're saying premeditated.
Okay.
This is a premeditated shine.
You know what? Everything about that whole event was premeditated. Are we going to now? You think that confetti just came from up in the sky?
Was it
premeditated?
Every
element of this is premeditated.
Confetti and all that was in celebration of the actual participants.
And he wouldn't celebrate.
OBJ's not a participant. He just made himself one, and he just drove. He just created more headlines about himself to talk because he's a used car salesman. He's an influencer. He's there to sell his product.
So lesser celebrity athletes who are alums, they're not saying, look at me. It's just nobody looking. But guess what? Honey Badger there, I'm sorry. You just got Trump because Odell's in the building. Odell's super famous everywhere, especially on LSU.
Bucky Brooks is back with us. Let's move to Derrick Henry, whose huge year has carried the Titans to the AFC Championship game.
Ooh.
With the back becoming the first player in NFL history to rush for 180 yards in three straight games, Henry will be a free agent after the season. But if recent history is any guide, monster contracts for running backs like Todd Gurley, David Johnson, and Le'Veon Bell haven't really panned out. Should the Titans give Derrick Henry a huge contract?
Yes. Slight apprehension, obviously, the running back position, but not to put him in connection to other guys who haven't lived up to their contracts necessarily, or Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley. It's more because of his production and the attempts and the carries. He's averaging 20 carries, 102 yards in the regular season, and then he has an uptick to 32 carries, 188 yards in the postseason. Let's check that odometer. If you're going to give him that many commas because of his production, we got to check that odometer sooner or later if you're going to give him this level of usage. So that's the only thing that gives me hesitation and pause. Other than that, pay the man.
I like seeing people rewarded for their work, and he is their number one offensive player. I know they're about to break the bank for Ryan Tannehill, but when we've looked at the Tennessee Titans through the playoffs, it has been the Derrick Henry show. And if the Tennessee Titans continue to advance and they move on to the Super Bowl with him being the bell cow, you have to reward him for being the number one offensive playmaker.
I'm going to be a wimp here and kind of pat. I don't know what to do here. The trend on running backs just isn't good. I love Derrick Henry, everything about it. He's earned the money. He's a great player. But the trend, I thought the same thing about Todd Gurley. I thought the same thing about David Johnson when he was balling. If I'm Tennessee, and I know this isn't part of the question, I don't know if I pay Henry or Ryan Tannehill.
Neither one.
We're just going to bypass him. We're going to win games and we're going to get others.
AFC Championship game.
I'm afraid. I mean, you got to make a decision.
But we got to pay somebody.
I know. I agree. Originally the question was, who would you pay, Henry or Tannehill? And so I'll answer that question. I'd pay Henry before I'd pay Tannehill.
Because running backs are cheaper.
Cheaper. And he's carried him.
Yeah.
I like what Tannehill's done, but I'm just scared, man. There's been too many of these guys fall off a cliff. Le'Veon Bell, there was a couple years where I was like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing I ever seen.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Well, if you look at it, Derrick Henry just got here to this level. Mm-hmm. Look at his usage. Like his first year, he had 490 yards. He's gotten better every year with more carries, more yards, more touchdowns. So they actually have brought him along slowly. Therefore, there's still a lot of tread left in those tires.
I'm going to flip. I like the way he carries himself, too.
Yeah,
he makes me believe he would never lay down on you. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for LSU quarterback Joe Burrow.
You know?
Oh. But first, I know Marcel's your big dummy of the day.
Something in your ear. Some water in your ear.
Hey, man. Big dummy of the day.
Here we go.
What'd he say? Talking about a title town.
Green Bay.
Hey, man. Stick to something you know. Like Biscuits and Gravy Boulevard. You don't know a damn thing about Titletown. When the last time you been there?
I won a title in high school. All right, let's talk Joe Burrow.
It's stale now.
Beast.
Who completed an incredible season last night with a dominant win over Clemson for the national championship. Burrow has now won the title, the Heisman, gone undefeated, and set a new NCAA record for touchdown passes. Marcellus,
yes.
Is this the greatest college football season ever?
No. It's second. Because of the numbers and who he had to beat to get there and undefeated, all that, yes. Second, first, Barry Sanders. Because there's a difference between throwing the ball in the air and someone else catching it for 60 yards or you actually doing all that work with the ball in your hand for 60 yards. And that's what Barry did.
That's a hell of a point. I don't know where you're going with that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Those receivers had a big deal to do with those 60 touchdowns. Barry scored 39 all on his own.
On his own.
Uncle Jimmy.
Give me that.
What?
Do you have a take on Joe Burrow? I think he should refuse to play in Cincinnati.
I think you killing me.
Killing who?
You killing me. Let me get this right. You saying that Joe Burrow should not go to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Because the owner, Mike Brown, is cheap.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I believe. They don't spend as
now,
much.
Now, look at it. Let me tell you one thing for certain and two things for sure.
You walking it too.
You are definitely the Mike Brown of Sports Talk TV.
I do it.
Hey, and if that's the case, then this show got to definitely be the Bengals.
We ain't the Bengals, man.
Look at man, ain't nobody walking through Fox or looking at this show on TV and getting us confused with the New England Patriots. Ain't nobody getting you confused with Bill Belichick, all right?
No.
Now, they might get you confused with Romeo Crennel. But you damn sure ain't gonna be no Bill Belichick, okay?
You stupid.
See, here's my problem. You up here living high on the hog, and you still got me and Darnell out here working on this shoestring budget. Uncle Jimmy come out every day singing and dancing, trying to get a contract.
Oh, man, don't do
that. Hey, poor Darnell, hell, he's still out here selling T-shirts. You up here eating truffle chicken. Last week, hell, me and Darnell had to pass up on a bucket of chicken.
Oh, man.
So now look here. Now listen to this dysfunctionality that I'm speaking of. If we the Bengals, and we damn sure is, then without a doubt, I got to be Anthony Munoz. The GOAT of the Bengals franchise.
Wow.
Oh, you Anthony Munoz.
Listen to me. A 17-year vet from the Wyandotte County Sheriff's Department. Former United States Marine from the 3rd Tank Battalion. Now look here. Say I'm not the most experienced man either one of you have ever met. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, we definitely know that.
Hell, besides yourself, nephew, am I not the most well-rounded man you ever met? Tell the truth.
Not quite, but anyway, continue.
Look here, when you came begging me to join this little sorry show, did me and my three daddies hold you hostage?
No.
No, we did not. Did we demand that you trade us to UTI with Mike Stillborn?
Mike Wilbon.
ETI.
Look, we was professionals. You know why? Because anything less would be uncivilized. And what have I done since I walked through the door?
Bless them.
Look here, when I walked through this little ragtag, hush puppy wearing crumb crake ass organization, what did I do? I turned this organization around. The moment I walked through the door, what do we do? We went from worst to first. We went from least to beast. Zero to hero. And that's exactly what Joe Burrow's going to do for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay. All right,
I got Joe Burrow.
I show you better than I can tell you.
At an all-star level, 25 job performer, 17 all-time greatness, 15 in character. He quit on Ohio State. 20 authenticity, 77.
Yeah, I'm close to you, that character. I saw him snap at Coach yesterday, and he talking about his ribs. Don't touch me. You're a little too dramatic for me. Other than that, I got to have him gold status still. Respect.
It's early for gold status. He got to do something in
the NFL. Why number one overall pick? Best season ever in college football.
Wow.
Yeah.
The internet agrees with you. They have him at gold status as well. Yeah.